Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 105 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host as usual. Today, I'm delighted to have as my guest, Lee Ferris. Lee is the product manager for CHL Software, a privately owned company in the UK, who is probably best known, at least in terms of the legal community, for producing a product called DocMoto. DocMoto is a high-performance document and email management system designed specifically for organizations running Mac networks or Apple networks. It's a native Mac application, has that familiar Apple look and feel to it, provides a host of functions to improve efficiency, including things like complete document management control and email management with those documents, things like revision control and change notification and sophisticated tagging to ensure the ability to catalog and search the document repository. And to be honest with you, I wasn't entirely sure what benefits a document management system afforded a solo or small law firm practice. And so that's one of the reasons why I wanted to invite Lee on the show, because I know the product that they offer for Mac networks is really robust and very well, very highly thought of. And so while this is going to be, you know, Apple-centric in that sense, the functionality and the capabilities of a document management service such as DocMoto is obviously widely available on Windows-based systems. So if you're considering, do I need a document management system, you still should listen to this podcast, because there's some valuable information that Lee provides as to what types of capabilities and what types of features such a system ought to have. So I learned a ton from Lee doing this interview, and I hope you enjoyed as much as I did. So without any further delay, here's my friend Lee Ferris. Lee Ferris, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Hi, and thanks for having me.
Well, I'm delighted that you can make the time to be with us today, Lee. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and who you are and how you came to be where you are today.
Well, my name's Lee Ferris, and I'm the product manager here for CHL Software, and specifically for the product DocMoto, which is a document and email management system for professional users of Mac. Now, the company itself, its origins, we started off designing management systems for local councils or local governance. And in there, we actually did management systems for issuing permits, for the renewal of permits. And during our time making these management systems for local governance, one of them asked us to actually create a system that converted Java applets into PDF. And this later was known as PDF Moto. And as this thing started evolving, we had many requests to include items such as revision control. Now, after a while of doing this, we wondered whether or not there was some commercial value to this system. So we started reaching out to the market, looking at various document management systems, and it became very clear very quickly that the Windows market was a very, very busy marketplace indeed, and not a particularly good place to be, especially when you consider you're taking on giants such as Microsoft with SharePoint is probably the most obvious one. But when we started looking into Mac, we noticed that there was actually no players within the Mac market. And I do want to be clear about that last point, because it suggests that there is no document management offerings other than .moto, and that's not really the case. So to be clear, when I say there was nothing on the Mac platform, there was nothing native. So in other words, right, a lot of document management systems were browser-based. And again, if you're taking the time and effort to buy a Mac platform, one would really question why you'd run management systems through a browser. You know, you buy a Mac for the experience, for the usability, for the aesthetic. So we felt that this was a good place to be. Subsequently, we set off on a journey to San Francisco to the Mac World show while it was still going, in the Moscone Center. And we started canvassing people in and around the Mac environment to see whether or not this was even of interest, because there's no real point going down a path when you know that it's a dead end. But I'm glad to tell you that that first meeting, crikey, that's 10 years ago today, that a lot of the people that were coming to our trade stand were saying, no, there is a space for this. We've been crying out for this for some time because we've been forced to use browser-based systems, or even worse, right, use virtualization and use Windows systems on a Mac. You know, so as you can imagine, as a Mac user, that's not particularly desirable. Subsequently, after spending 4 years developing .moto, we finally released it onto the market, and it became very clear very quickly that legal was going to be a significant vertical to us. We got a lot of inquiries from various legal firms, ranging from the solos to three-man firms, right up to sort of 100, 200 users. So that's why we are where we are today.
Terrific. Now, you know, to address the elephant in the room here, it's no secret to our listeners that I'm an unabashed Apple fanboy. And so I recognize that .moto being an Apple product, one might say, well, you know, I'm going to check out here because that's not me and that's not what I'm interested in. But I think what you're going to find in our discussion today is we're going to talk about specifically what .moto does, but more generally what a document management system and email management system affords its user in terms of gaining control and leveraging technology to be more efficient and therefore more profitable and ultimately more likely to succeed as a solo or small firm practice. And if in doing so you're convinced to come over from the dark side, you know, to the Apple world, so be it. You'll find us there waiting for you with welcome arms. But in the meantime, as an Apple fanboy and one who's familiar with the products out there in the market, I have to confess, Lee, that I'm not 100% sure that I understand what a document management system truly is. Can you help explain that?
Yeah, sure. Probably the most succinct way I can describe a document management system is as follows. True document management systems tend to be what's known as a client-server application. And just for those non-technical types, just to give a bit of clarity on what that really means, is that the server side of an application acts as a centralized repository for all electronic media contained within a company, business, or practice. Now, in .moto's terms, we're quite unique because we are truly file independent. And what I mean by that is that we haven't found a file type as yet, whether this be Microsoft Office-based products such as Word, Excel, or PowerPoint, their iWorks equivalents, Pages, Numbers, Keynote, PDF files, video files. In fact, Neil, it would probably be quicker for me just to state that we haven't found an electronic file type as yet that doesn't work in our system. There's a more succinct way of describing it.
Okay, so it's file type agnostic. It doesn't matter what application creates the file, whether it's a word processing file or a spreadsheet or a PDF, that .moto, as a document management system, it has the ability to manage that file type.
That's exactly right.
Okay, continue.
And the client side of our software is essentially a viewer or portal to allow individuals or groups of people to then be able to look into that centralized repository and be able to share and collaborate on the materials being held inside, dependent on security and permissions that have been applied to certain areas of that repository. Now, I put it to all the listeners and yourself, Neil, that because we can store any type of electronic file, especially when one considers emails, that the information in such a system can grow exponentially, even over a short period of time.
Sure.
Now, with this in mind, you know, Docmoto and other document management systems have some very specific features and functions that will aid users in terms of being able to categorize or catalog material as it's either being imported into the system or created inside of the system. This can often be referred to as tagging. Now, of course, tagging's main purpose is really to be able to categorize or apply certain taxonomy to certain areas of the document repository. And this will aid other users in terms of being able to use that taxonomy in search criteria to pull back information out of that system, hopefully in an equally intelligent and expedient manner. A lot of document management systems include templating functions. And like any templating function, it really is about the ability to quickly create commonly used materials. Now, Docmoto is unique in the following regard, because not only can Docmoto template at a document level, but it can also do so at a folder level. So for anybody now thinking, yes, so what? You know, big deal. How exactly is that useful to us? Well, the reason it becomes useful is because most practices that we've ever come across have a designated hierarchical folder structure that's created for a specific type of matter. Now, whether this is intellectual property, litigation, elder law, estate planning, administration, estate, probate, any of the above, really, they have a standard uniform structure that they create for these matters, where the folders and subfolders are labeled according to the document types. So in litigation terms, you might have exhibits, pleadings, affidavits, depositions, and so forth. Now, this folder templating technology allows us to create a template and save it so that when each user then comes in to create a new matter, all they do is type in the name of the matter. The template is already there, ready to go. Select the go button, so to speak, and it will automatically create not only the hierarchical structure, it will apply permissions to certain areas of that folder structure, it will create documents within there, and it will even assign tags right from the get-go, such as a matter ID might be a good example of this.
Yeah, let me go back to the tags for just a second. And when we talk about the taxonomy of being able to search and organize file types, by tagging, you essentially put a label, or as you say, a tag on the file. And regardless of what the source of that file might be, whether it's a word processor or a spreadsheet or a PDF, if they all have the same tag, you can then, you know, group those files in the appropriate location based on that tag. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of many uses for tags, yeah. But that is certainly one of them.
Yeah. So let me ask you, just going back a little bit to the hierarchical or to the architectural structure here, the server-client relationship. I think, you know, a lot of folks, particularly the non-techie type, think of a server as being a physical location where the files are located. I got a server in my office, I back it up, you know, to a backup system, and all my files are located on the server, as opposed to, say, for instance, in the cloud. Sure. So is Docmoto a physical server construction that is, you know, local to your location or to your network, or can that server part of the application, in fact, be in the cloud or remotely located?
The short answer to that is actually it can be either, but that sounds rather glib. So just let me expand on that answer just ever so slightly. The server architecture point you are making, it is something I come across very often, and you're quite right. A lot of people do misconstrue what we mean by a server, because as you say, they think of a physical entity, a box somewhere, whether it's in the cloud or on their local area network. When we talk about server, we're actually talking about the service that runs. In other words, you know, it responds to requests for a certain document, for a certain email, a certain PDF, video file, and so forth. Now, that server component does indeed reside within Mac architecture. It could be a Mac Pro, Mac Mini, going back in a few days, the Xserve, of course, which no longer exists, sadly, although we do have plenty. But in terms of the actual component architecture itself, we can actually have it cloud-based. We use Rackspace or AWS. However, we're quite unique, we think, in modern-day terms, because a lot of software manufacturers only do cloud now, and even the ones that offer what we would consider an on-premise solution, these seem to be going by the way. Now, we're not going to do that. We're actually going to keep with an on-premise solution and a cloud-based solution, because for every practice that's comfortable in terms of confidential and private data being secured in the cloud, there are plenty that don't. Yeah,
exactly, and that's one of the reasons I asked the question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's true. There are plenty. If I was to give you a sort of arbitrary figure of strength or split between cloud and on-premise, I would suggest to you at the moment it's something in the region of 65% cloud, 35% on-premise.
Really?
Yeah, it's roughly that. I think especially with some of the smaller practices as well, because a lot of the time, you know, Apple releases significant amount of software updates. Their architecture does change reasonably frequently. And of course, subsequently, there is this sort of maintenance of not just the hardware, but the software that resides on those machines. Now, for a smaller practice, sometimes if they don't have an IT consultant or somebody in-house that can deal with those types of issues, then they think it's a lot easier for the provider of that service to actually host the service on their own hardware. So in terms of backups, security patches, updates, and so forth, that can be done by the actual service provider. And I think there is some sense to that as well.
Yeah. Well, and I think particularly in the legal space, the vertical legal space, I think there's a little more sensitivity when you're talking about documents, because that is the essence of where that confidential information resides. And so you have to be mindful of that aspect of security in terms of, you know, where am I going to host my document management system and how am I going to host it? And it's encouraging, I think, to find a product such as DocMoto that gives you the opportunity to make those choices either on premise or in the cloud or some hybrid function of both, I suspect.
Yeah, no, indeed, I couldn't agree more. And on that line, a lot of the time with our ethos at CHL Software, and specifically for the product DocMoto, we always try and give the end user choices, because in this day and age, it really is about choice. And we try, even in terms of the features and functions that we offer, you know, there's the 80-20 rule. I'm not sure if listeners are familiar with this, but just in case they're not, 80% of user groups tend to use 20% of the functions that are on offer in any software application. And subsequently, you know, you tend to find a small set of functions are being used. But our ethos has always been give the users as extensive toolkit as possible. And if they choose not to use those functions, of course, that's their prerogative. But we've given them enough tools, enough features and functions that they can truly tailor these to their practices or businesses' requirements.
Sure. And everybody's 20% may be different.
Absolutely.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM and case management tool I've been using for years to manage my practice. If you're feeling swamped trying to keep track of cases and clients, but you don't want to pay the hefty price tag of something like Salesforce or other legal-specific tools, I recommend you give Daylight a look. Daylight helps me prioritize my day. It helps me keep track of my clients, cases, documents, emails, calendars, to-dos, and reminders, all in one place. The case management part of Daylight makes it really easy to organize all the details and work for each case so things are done on time. The best part of Daylight is that it lets you work offline. You don't need an internet connection to pull up case details or info about a client like with other CRMs and case management tools. And new in Daylight is their Zapier integration, so you can automate things like pulling new leads from a contact form on your website right into Daylight. And for techies like me, you know that integration with tools like Zapier is really fundamental to making something like Daylight work the way you want it to work. So to learn how Daylight can help you grow your practice, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first month subscription. That's Daylight by Market Circle. This episode is also brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. Visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. Spotlightbranding.com/TLE, brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. So now I'm starting to get a picture here, particularly in the sense that I can use DocMoto to and the template functions to create a folder hierarchy or structure given any particular legal matter, and it works with any file type that I might create. So here I am creating pleadings in a word processor such as Word or Pages, or I'm doing some spreadsheets in Excel or numbers, for example. But I'm still not clear, what does DocMoto do for me at that point?
Okay, at that point, one of the biggest issues that practices, even the smaller ones, and potentially even solo attorneys as well, is what we would call a distribution of data. So at the moment, let's say hypothetically, you were using either a shared file system, or even if it's a distributed file system. Now, when I say distributed file system, just to offer everybody a bit of clarity, what I'm really referring to there are applications such as Dropbox and Box. So in other words, they're file synchronization programs. Now, with those types of programs, the issue you can have here is that you might have your legal documentation that relates or pertains to a particular type of matter stored in that area that's distributed on accounts that are registered to Dropbox or Box, for instance. But then you have email correspondence that could potentially be in Google Mail. You could have it in Outlook. You could potentially have it in Apple Mail. And straight away, I've got now two different search points. So even in the terms of retrieval of data, I have to search the file system. And then if I want to relate any email correspondence or even attachments for those email correspondence, I have to go to a separate area.
Sure.
Now, of course, if you have more than one user, each user that you get further past, you know, 2, 3, 4, for the nth number, that exacerbates that problem, because then I've got 6 or 7 different mail clients for each user. I've got a distribution of material in terms of syncing. And of course, even with a file system or those synchronization programs, to secure folders, even within my practice. So, for example, if I was an attorney and I had very confidential or privileged papers, I would like to be safe in the knowledge that only I can see those. You know, it's nobody else within the practice if they're only privy to me. Now, in file systems and sync programs, this can be quite a problem to do. Now, in DocMoto, this can all be done and automated through the creation of these folder templates. So it really does allow us to do so. And of course, because we can store emails alongside all other legal types of documentation, it means then that I have one search point and a very clever list of taxonomy or tags that can be applied. Now, I didn't mention this earlier about tags, but I think it is worth mentioning, because every time I've come across other programs with tags, what they really mean is this. They mean keywords.
Yeah.
So I can apply a keyword to a specific document, potentially more than one keywords. Now, even this has its limitation, because I'll try and use this analogy and see if it works. I could go into one library and I could ask the librarian, well, how have you organized your books? You know, what's your taxonomy? And they could say, it's all alphabeticized. Fantastic. I go into another library and say, well, how have you organized your books? It's done by genre. I go into another library and it's all done via ISBN number. Now, if I was to put it to you, Neil, or any of the listeners, which one of those is correct? Well, they're all correct. they're all correct. Now, if I have a practice where each individual has their own idea in terms of categorizations or taxonomy that can be applied to these items to make them more searchable, then at that point, I've got a real problem, because each person, as I've hopefully illustrated with that analogy, could have quite different ideas on how to do this. Now, in Dotmoto, not only do we support keywords, we do support keywords, but we also support this ability to literally build a list of taxonomy. So under document type, for instance, I could have exhibit, affidavit, deposition, record, and so forth. So then when the user is presented with the tag, they have no other choice. This isn't a sort of carte blanche, or you know, I can insert something on an ad hoc basis that hopefully some of my other user group might get. No, it's a clear defined set of taxonomy. Even with things like contracts. Now, if I'm putting a date and time against, or an expiration date against a contract, and I want to run a search and say, okay, fine for me, all contracts that expire in Q1 of 2018. Now, of course, as the listeners might know, I am from the UK, mm-hmm. and we tend to put our dates in terms of the date, so the 22nd of March 2018. Now, my US cousins and colleagues tend to do it the other way around, where it's month, then the date,
right.
then the year. So again, that really highlights that point that if we have two different types of date fields and we're searching for dates, it's going to become problematic. But by having clear defined date fields or tags, it means now I can conduct searches to say, fine for me, all contracts that expire, obviously I'll put the 1st of the 1st, 2018, to obviously the 1st of the 4th, 2018. Off we go.
Yeah.
So it really does, you know, give you proper search capabilities. It gives you control over how those documents are being categorized. And because we can automate a lot of the processes as well, including document automation. So even when these folder templates are first run, as well as putting all these bits in place, for instance, if you have an engagement letter that's always drawn up each and every time a matter is created, this can be created at the same time. So again, in terms of time efficiencies and savings, we can actually pull that document in at the same time, create it within the space, and we can even build a workflow that will allow you then to obviously send that item via a secure share. Again, I hope all that made sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. I'm drawing back on my previous lifetime as a software engineer and developer, and remembering spending countless hours trying to define file naming conventions and storage structure, templates, and the like, so that the entire team could have some consistency in the approach to managing, you know, the products that we are generating. The same is true in the legal space. If you have multiple folks in your office, as you have said, if they're creating files for different cases or different matters, you want to make sure that there's a naming convention there that's consistent, that allows for a lot of different functionality based on just the file naming convention alone. Then you add upon that true and proper tagging, as you're talking about, that controls all that potential variety. Then you're now talking about having an efficiency in a system that is really quite significant.
No, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And one last point about automation as well, because we're talking about cost efficiencies and savings, and it'd be remiss of me not to bring up document automation.
Right.
Because as I've suggested, we do support document templates, but we have actually taken it a stage further. So this can often be referred to as document assembly or automation. I've heard both terms being used.
I like but document the idea assembly, yeah.
Yeah, well, the idea and principle behind it is that we can tie this into the folder template so that when the template is run, we have essentially the client's details set against the parent folder. So things like the client name, client address, what's the type of matter, what's the status of that matter, and so forth.
Now, is that set via like an intake form or a template creation form?
It's a pretty good description, actually. Yes. I mean, I'd be quite happy for it to be described that way, because it is set against the form, against the parent folder.
Okay.
It has two massive advantages here. Once I've actually filled in those clients' details, our folder tags, which is essentially what this form is predicated on, we deal with inheritance. So now that any of those subfolders underneath, where it's a deposition, correspondence, if I then go to a document template within there, I then get presented a whole plethora of different document templates that I can run. And let's say I do select one of the letters. When I then go to hit create, I have two huge benefits here. Benefit number one is that in any management system, one of the biggest issues users can face is importing data into the incorrect area. Right. You know, we've all done it at some stage, including myself. You know, mm-hmm. We all have bad days, and it can happen. Now, of course, if one is starting the document's life cycle inside of the document management system, well, there is no need to import. I'm already in the correct area. So that would be benefit number one. But benefit number two is that as a practice, I can now upload or import document templates with my practice's logos, liveries, color schemes, salutations, valedictions, and so forth, ensuring that I get continuity and consistency each and every time a letter is being produced. But furthermore, because we've had that intake form for the document assembly filled in with the client's details, as that document is being created, of course, it's also being assembled according to the form that we filled in. Now, some of these documents can be quite complex. And subsequently, you know, the drafting time for this could be anywhere in the region of half an hour to an hour by the time it's finished. Now, of course, in Docmoto, we can reduce that time down to somewhere in the region of 2 to 5 minutes. Furthermore, a lot of lawyers that have started using this software are now actually requesting their paralegals construct the letter because, of course, they're safe in the knowledge that the text within that document is sure. generic and has been spell checked, grammar checked, and so forth. They know that they're going to have the correct practices, logos, liveries, and even the digital signature of that attorney can be applied to that document. So now when attorneys are charging out at whatever rate they are, they can still charge the same rate, but they can then delegate that responsibility to maybe somebody else whilst they get on with other tasks.
Well, and then the file that's subsequently created is done so in the native word processing application that the user has selected, or is it some type of Docmoto format?
No, with regard to that, at the moment, it still works with Word only at the moment. However, probably jumping ahead here a little bit, but we have got a development plan that we're going to increase this functionality to both Pages and PDF. Now, this is part of the development plan, and I'll not make promises I can't keep, sure. give time scales on that, but it's a case of when, not if.
But the largest probably installed base on the legal side, even for the Mac world, is Microsoft Word. So you've gotten most of that 80% covered right there.
Indeed.
So it doesn't take the place of mail merge per se, and it's not taking the place of your customer relation management or your practice management software. It's working coherently with those tools as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I often use the following expression with a lot of people. It was even a mantra, really. In terms of documentation, everything starts and finishes in Docmoto. In other words, the whole life cycle of that document. Now, whether that's from the creation of that document, the assembly of that document, the tagging, the searching, generating reports, even down to the versioning, because
that's going to be my next question for you, for version control, but go ahead.
No, absolutely. Well, I mean, it's probably a good segue now. Okay. Versioning, I think sometimes when I've talked to practices, my initial thoughts were always, they don't really appreciate the power of versioning, because I'll give you a small anecdote. One of our corporate customers, who I'd love to tell you who it is, but unfortunately we do have an NDA with them, so sure. I can't divulge that information, but needless to say, they are a very significant company. This corporate legal came to us and said, look, Lee, can you do a demonstration for our corporate legal team, but can we ask you to use our materials? And I said, yeah, of course. You know, it would be great to do a demo with your materials. Your user base is going to see terminology that they're familiar with. It's certainly going to make them feel a lot more comfortable. So, yeah, send it across. They sent this information across, and it was absolute gold dust. Because when I got this material, I had seen that, of course, because they're using a file system, their documents were essentially suffixed with V1, V2, V3, or even statuses, so draft, final, and so forth. But when I looked through one of their proposals, it had four versions. And as I looked down it, version 3 had a file modification date that was more recent than version 4.
Yeah.
So, of course, this was pure gold dust. So when I did the demonstration, I pointed this out to them and said, so which one of these then do you think is the latest version? And they said, well, version 4. And I said, right, okay. And I used the camera and zoomed right in and showed them the file modification date and said, are you sure? And of course, at that point, they all looked at it. And there's a very good chance that version 4 might have been the latest. But if that didn't put the seed of doubt in one's mind,
yeah,
I don't know what would.
Sure.
So, of course, at this point, with .moto, what we actually do when we version is that the current version of a document when saved, and this is done automatically, but when it's saved, .moto will automatically revision control the document so that the document on display is essentially always the latest version. Guaranteed.
Yep.
Now, of course, subsequently, because there's only one file on display, I think it's a perfectly reasonable question for people to be thinking, well, okay, well, how does one get back to the previous versions if required? Now, what we can actually do there is that we have a version history button, which essentially shows you the whole chronological history of this file, who amended it, why did they amend it, when was it modified, and so forth. But furthermore, we also then allow them to say, well, we'll select any of these versions on this version tree, for want of a better expression, and I'll run a comparison or a red line against the current version to what was the amendments carried out to the previous version. And it will then merge those documents together and run a red line over them. Now, of course, we're all human. Mistakes can and more than likely will happen. So what we've also incorporated is the ability to set versions to the latest. So if you do make a mistake, it's not the end of the world. You can go into that version history dialog, select the version that you want to revert back to, revert back to it. And it's a really good way of doing things, because a lot of the times when I've spoken to practices, they tend to try and use these document IDs, you know, which are sort of 8 characters minimum, to make them unique identifiers, and they do it in each version. But again, coming to track that sort of information becomes quite problematic, you know, no matter how much you put policies and procedures in place.
Yeah, and they're only as good as they're followed. If you don't follow them, or you follow them incorrectly, having a detailed procedure or policy does you no good.
Absolutely. And like I say, I think sometimes it's human nature.
Yeah.
People often fall back on habits, you know, and more often than not, that's what I say to people, say, look, you know, this is habits. And what we've tried to do with .moto, because it's a native Mac program too, and because we've made it look very similar to Finder, Steve Jobs once used this expression at one of the Mac expos that I went to, and it was brilliant, really, because it was a new bit of software. And he turned around and said, look, a lot of these features and functions I'm going to show you today, I don't really need to show you. You already know them. And what he was alluding to was the fact that Mac programs do have a common look and feel to them. So, you know, going from one application to another, whether it's Pages to Numbers, for instance, you know, the controls are the same. So yeah, the learning curve is certainly a lot shallower.
The versioning, I think, is clearly valuable. If you're drafting contracts and there's multiple people working on a contract, you always want to make sure that it's, the end result is reflecting the most recent discussion. And I'm assuming through all that process, you also have record locking such that the document is not being changed simultaneously by more than one user and somehow getting corrupt in the process.
No, absolutely. It's a term that they often use in the document management world as check in, check out. Yeah, absolutely. We support full check in, check out. But even with that methodology, we have tried to streamline that, because a lot of the time, you know, going back to people's habits, it's all well and good having a checkout process and locking a file to, as you suggest, you know, prevent overwriting of each other's work. But of course, all of that depends upon the user remembering to check it back in, because yeah, otherwise they're going to lock everyone out from that file.
Exactly.
And it happens quite often.
I'm now starting to see the real power of this tool and this service to my law practice. What are some of the roadblocks that people have to adopting something like this? Is it I don't want to have to learn a new system, or my practice is different, you don't understand, You know, what are the robots that are being presented to you for adoption?
I think the two biggest ones that spring to mind, the first is this. More often than not, a lot of practices come to an online demonstration, and I think their first initial fear is this toolkit going to be extensive enough to give me a significant return on my investment? Is it going to fulfill all of my requirements? Usually, by the time I've finished demonstrations, that fear has somewhat changed from, crikey, this thing does an awful lot. How long is it going to take me to configure this thing? Yep. That's usually where the fear lies. So I tend to find that, you know, subsequently practices are a little bit reticent because they think, well, I'm going to have to invest some time here to basically configure this software because it is so configurable to match my requirements. The other point that I would suggest is that scheduling. Now, especially for the smaller practices, because a lot of the time, you know, business as usual has to come first. So just allocating a reasonable amount of time during one's working week to actually truly evaluate the software becomes very tricky. And I really do appreciate that. It's very difficult. Now, we have come up with certain methodologies that we think helps alleviate both those problems. And if you want, Neil, I can go into those.
Yeah, let's just touch on those briefly.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we tend to do past the demonstration, we say, well, look, you know, are you interested? Does it fulfill your requirements? Usually that's when but how long is this going to take to configure? Now, at that point, what we do is when we run an evaluation, this is true for both on-premise and cloud, the principle is the same, that we schedule a start point with the practice when, obviously, hopefully their caseload isn't too heavy and they might have a little bit of time during their working week. So we'll come online with them, and our trial systems actually have examples of various different legal matters. For legal, obviously we do deal with other verticals, but let's stick with legal. So we put some examples in place, and what we do, we walk them through that system and their user group. Then we schedule follow-up appointments. It only needs to be one day during the working week for a minimum of half an hour, I would suggest, nothing more than an hour. And in that time, we will say, right, okay, we're going to create a folder template with you, but we're going to use your terminology. We're going to use your structures, and we'll put that into place. And we do that once a week for however long the trial lasts. You know, the shortest trial I've seen was about 2 weeks. The longest, I think, was about 6 months. So with that in mind, when we're going through this process, because we're training them in terms of this is how you create a folder template, this is how you create a document template, this is how you convert that template, so it's automated. Because we're doing that, by the time we reach the end of that evaluation process, it might be an exaggeration of me to say everybody hits the ground running. Yeah, that probably is a bit of an exaggeration, but I don't think it's an exaggeration to say everyone hits the ground jogging, because they've already been trained on the product, so there's a certain level of familiarity with it. And plus, they've all had a buy-in, which is really good news. And the second point I would suggest is that, of course, in terms of configuration, we don't have to worry about this too much, because that's what we've been training you on. Right. So that's how we sort of alleviate that sort of issue. Now, the scheduling issue is probably the most awkward one, because there is only so much you can do with that, because, you know, it is what it is.
And I hear people say, gee, I'd love to incorporate a new tool or a new product into my workflow. Just, you know, tell me when I'm going to have the time to be able to, you know, take advantage of that. So it does raise the question for me is, if I'm a true solo, or as I like to say, a three-man firm consisting of me, myself, and I, if I'm a true solo, can I still get value out of a product such as DocMoto or document management system?
I think the answer is yes, but I will give a couple of caveats with that, because, again, I don't want to mislead your listeners in terms of this is a perfect tool for solo, because I'm not sure that is true. I think our sweet spot, so to speak, if you'll pardon the expression, right, starts at three users upwards. That is really our sweet spot. However, we do have solo users come to us, and this is usually the following scenario where they've moved forward with DocMoto. They've come from a large practice, tends to be Windows-based, I might add, and they've decided that they're going to go out on their own and build their own practice. Now, they've always wanted to use Mac. The old practice has used Windows, so they're going to buy Mac this time round. They've bought Mac, and they want to future-proof themselves. So in other words, you know, they want to grow the practice. They know they're going to get more resources sooner rather than later. And they want to do it then when they're setting up the practice, because they think if I do it ahead of time, it means as we're getting more paying clients, you know, we're converting prospects into clients. It means then I don't have to worry about my infrastructure. It's already in place, ready to go. Now, the other solo attorneys that have come to us are people that are extremely document-centric, like legal people aren't anyway, but I mean extremely document-centric. So in other words, their lifeblood is about the creation of documents. So in terms of document assembly, again, on the Mac platform, I can't think of many. There are a couple, but not many. Not as many as, again, as the Windows world. So they do tend to come to us primarily for the document assembly. But the fact, obviously, that we have a whole plethora of tools we can offer them as well, I think that they think, right, okay, I'm future-proofing myself again. You know, primarily, I'm using the document assembly. This is making my task of creating documents down from an hour to something like 5 minutes. And again, if it's taking you an hour to construct it normally, and this tool's doing it in 5 minutes, again, you don't need to be an economist or mathematician to appreciate the savings that you're making from there.
And I can see this is the same argument with respect to, say, a practice management software. Many a true solo would say, well, you know, I really don't need practice management software right now. It's just me. I can keep track of everything on my computer or in my office. But the alternate part of that argument is, well, hopefully you're going to build your practice up a little bit so that you'll be either using virtual assistants or in-house assistants or eventually additional attorneys, and you want to have that practice management architecture in place and used so that you can grow. It could grow with the firm, and the same is true, I think, here in document management. If you may not get the full benefit of all the bells and whistles as a true solo, but setting yourself up for growth so that you have a tool that can reveal all of its features to you as you have a greater need seems to me to be a wise decision.
Absolutely.
Well, Lee, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us here on The Law Entrepreneur. If folks on the who are listening want to reach out and chat with you further or contact you, what's the best way for them to do so?
Okay, our website is www.docmoto.com.
That's pretty straightforward.
Or you can use the email address info@docmoto.com. Either one of those will be perfectly fine.
Terrific. All right, Lee, thanks again for being with us on The Law Entrepreneur.
Many thanks for your time, Neil. Really do appreciate it.
Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency. And therefore, it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift.
And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.